grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody in the Zoom room will chat with you. Anybody in their first 30?
He's down. Glad you're here.
Glad you're here. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And this evening, we're going to be discussing step 12, part 2. Please welcome our panel this evening. We've got David and Elizabeth. All right, so I'm going to read the first paragraph on page 96, and then each of our panel is going to share for a few minutes or so on each of the readings, and then we'll carry on. Step 12, carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Suppose you are now making your second visit to a man. He has read this volume and says he's prepared to go through with the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Having had the experience yourself, you can give him much practical advice. Let him know you are available if he wishes to make a decision and tell his story, but do not insist upon it if he prefers to consult someone. David?
Hey, buddy, I'm an alcoholic. My name is David. Hey, David. Grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. Happy anniversary, Elizabeth.
Happy anniversary.
She's 6 years today. And as usual, I didn't ask permission to do that. I just did that, you know. That's how I roll. I have a sobriety date. It's 28 years old when I was, because of rooms like this and people ask birthday. I used to be a young people, but because of y'all. And you know, I'll qualify just a little. I think I'll throw in with these folks. I kind of felt sorry for you. You know, you looked a little rough and you had to turn in your fun card. And I'm going to figure this thing out myself. But your 12 steps are cute. I got some other ideas, you know. And I continued to run. I was out of them. But I hadn't had a drink in 6 years daily. So I was fairly miserable. And, you know, I came in and out 6 years and I knew, drunk on a bar stool, I knew that. You know, did you ever tell me that? I don't know. I came in and out, but I knew if I asked for it, you would help me. I knew that it wouldn't cost me anything. I knew I could believe anything that I wanted about God. You guys communicated all that stuff to me in and out of AA for 6 years. So anyway, the paragraph that we read has to do with the 12th step. And he says, I'm meeting with this guy for the second time. So it presumes a couple of things, right? I was lucky enough to meet you at a meeting. And it says the ex-problem drinker can genuinely win the confidence of another alcoholic in a few hours. It doesn't say with a phone number and a pat on the back and call me sometime. You know, I've spent some time with this guy. We hung out in the parking lot. We went out to dinner. We talked. I asked you what your drinking was like. I told you about my drinking. And that went so well, you came back a second time. You know, I've never required that anyone read through the entire book before our second meeting. So I'll just blow right by that. But it says, It says something very simple. Having had the experience yourself, you can give much practical advice. Practical advice about your finances, your marital situation. No, but I think about the 12 steps. Having had the experience with the 12 steps, you can help somebody with the 12. I'll share this and then I'll pass it because I really don't have much on this. The first guy that ever asked me to sponsor me, I said, well, I'll have to talk to my sponsor. Not because I work a good program, but because I didn't want to sponsor this guy. So I don't know about you guys. You ever call your sponsor and they don't have the same idea about stuff that you have? I call him up and I'm like, hey, man, this guy asked me to sponsor him. And he's like, great. I was like, no. Let me tell you the whole story. No, this guy came up and he asked me to sponsor him. He's like, great. I'm like, no, man, I haven't even done a fourth step. He's like, we've worked through the first three, right? I said, yeah. He said, you could help him with the first three, couldn't you? I said, I suppose. He said, well, just help him with the first three and stay one step ahead of him. And I hung up the phone. I thought, that guy's worth all the money I pay him. You know, I mean, that guy's a genius, you know. But this idea of being helpful to other people, that the program is equal to the 12 steps and the end game is to be of use and help to other people. You guys started tuning me up on that from the day I walked in here, and I didn't want to do any of it. Of course, you know, I'm still shaking, man. I'm still shaking. He's like, David, go see that guy over there. Go talk to him. I'm like, I don't have anything to say to him. Go welcome him. Stick out your hand. Welcome, you know. But from day one, reach out, connect. We're here to help each other. I'll pass.
My name's Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date of May 29th, 2017. I have a home group, which is Simple Actions. And let's see, I'm an alcoholic. I do not currently have a service position, which is kind of amazing. Normally I do, but our home group is growing. And so we have lots of people willing to do some work, which is amazing. I recently was the secretary. I take meetings into the institutions. I work with other women. And I'm just really, really grateful to be here tonight. I'll quickly qualify myself and then I'll talk about the reading. 6 years ago, yesterday, I was sitting in my therapist's office and I was rattling through everything that I had tried because I had been in and out of the rooms for 3 years. And AA didn't work because I wasn't willing to do what was being asked of me or suggested or anything, you know. I would come in, I would pick up a white chip, I would kind of go through the motions, you know, you would give me a suggestion. I had one sponsor that said, stay out of a relationship for the first year. I got into one with a newcomer. I had 60 days, he had 30. It was a match made in heaven until the police had to keep coming. I tried everything. Whether it was in the book or not in the book, like I was at another meeting and someone's like, yeah, I'm doing some research and listening to some podcasts. And I was like, oh, that was me. I had like 30 different books on recovery. I was cross-sectioning them and reading them and highlighting them. And I could tell you all about like the academic world of recovery, but I didn't know shit about how to get sober. I knew how to like destroy my life. I mean, I went to such lengths to use drugs and alcohol. And then I went to such lengths to stop using. I mean, I went to rehab, I went to IOP, I went to counseling, I went to a psychiatrist, I went to the therapist, psych center, I went to the hospital, I had an exorcism, like a real one. This lady was a shaman priest. It lasted 2 days before I drank again. I mean, she told me I had Beelzebub inside of me and I'm like, I think that's the devil. Oh my God. And so of course I had to drink over that because I was the devil. I even let a lady in Virginia Beach, who's a realtor, baptize me in her pool because I thought that was going to help me stop drinking. And none of it worked. I just got worse and worse and worse. And finally, I was at the point where I'm in that therapist's office and I'm starting to tell the truth, right? That the night before I had a bottle of wine in a 7-Eleven big Coke cup, because if you don't put ice in it, the whole thing fits. Everyone just thinks you're drinking big gulp. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching my father walk to the medicine cabinet because he has cancer. And I've stolen all of his pain medicine and replaced it with something else. and just watched like a psychopath and didn't say a word because my needs were greater than anyone else's needs. I had to get my fix. I had to use. I had no choice. So that psychiatrist put me in the hospital and against my will. And there was a man there who was armed with the facts about himself. And he said, you don't have to do this anymore. You can stop. And I was like, what are you, the chaplain? He's like, no, I'm your doctor for one, but I'm also a friend of Bill. And he started talking about a spiritual solution. So I called my friends. One of them's in the room. And I was like, oh my God, this is not going to work again. I don't know why I'm doing it. And another friend just said, why don't you pray for a different experience? It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. She's like, what do you have to lose? You keep trying and trying all these extravagant things. Just take direction. Take a few simple actions. Go to a meeting. Ask for help. Do what they tell you. I started doing that and I was quickly separated from alcohol for what I hope to be the last time. and my life today is full of hope. And I still have challenges. Like right now I'm on prednisone. So if I sound crazy, it's because I have a migraine and I'm trying to break it. But other than that, really glad that I'm here. And here's the quick response to this reading. The second visit, you know, recently I've had a couple of women who have approached me about working with them after they heard me share at a meeting. And when I start to ask questions like, are you an alcoholic? You would think most people would say, of course I am. But some people are like, well, what do you mean by that? You know, so I start talking about what it says in the big book. And then my second question is, are you willing to go to any length for victory over alcohol? Well, that they start to back away, you know, like, well, not sure. I'm kind of busy and I have children and a job. And then third question is, my third question is, what time can you call me exactly every day without fail, without excuses? And that's like usually the jumping off point for people. They're like, oh no, that's too much commitment. But the people that I start to talk to and not go through that, you know, those strict rules about sponsorship, but just start telling my story, we connect. And then I have an opportunity to sit down with them again, maybe read the sponsorship pamphlet, maybe just talk about what my sponsorship, you know, experience has been. But just relating one alcohol to another is like the most powerful experience. And we are here to help. We're help, you know, that's what I have for this.
Thanks, Eva.
Thank you both. All right. The next reading is going to be on page 98. It is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of the dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God.
Yes. You know, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about alcoholics. We try to stop. We got a mind that talks us into drinking. We drink, we go on another spree, go on another binge. I do kind of see myself as a spree drinker, you know. Some of those sprees were 6 months long, you know, but I was constantly trying to stop. I was constantly trying to detox every Monday morning. Always, I don't know about you guys, but all my plans start on Monday morning, no matter when I think of them, like Monday afternoon, next Monday would be a good time to start for sure. And, but my problems pile up on me and become astonishingly difficult to solve. And some of them are incredible, you know. I mean, most of us get here with marital problems, legal problems, any number of problems. And of course, that's what I want to talk about. Of course, I want to talk about my problems. And you guys are like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know if she's going to come back. I don't know if the money's going to work out. I got no idea. But you can take these steps. It's like you're handing me a handful of magic beans. You know, I'm trying to tell you that I need $50,000 and a good attorney. And you're like, no, the magic beans. You know what I mean? I got nowhere to file that information. And it's interesting that he says job or no job, wife or no wife. I mean, like I sponsor a lot of dudes. I'm, you know, If I'm tossing and turning at night, it's either about the money or the honey. You know, I got an irate phone call from a guy today. He didn't take a breath for 20 minutes straight. And it was all about his old lady. And then she did this and then not. And then, I mean, he's just twisted into a pretzel, you know? And I'm like, yeah, wow. And then when he let me get a word in edgewise, I said, you know, it can't be a picnic being married to you. And he started laughing. He's like, yeah, there's that. So, but I really think that if I can get my little duckies in a row, if I can get the money right, if I can get the honey right, if I can get the boss off my back, if I can get the legal stuff straightened out, if I wasn't under a subpoena, if I didn't, I got to get all that stuff together. And then what? David's going to be happy. Then I'll be happy. And then you guys remind me like, well, you know, you've had your shit together before and you were still, you know, discontent and miserable, right? Well, yeah, that's true. But this time it's going to be different. Yeah. So it says job or no job, wife or no wife. We simply just, we don't get well if we're depending on other people instead of depending on this higher power. And that sounds kind of lofty too, right? Like, oh, I guess I better go home and figure out how to depend on God. No, you don't need to figure it out, David. Sorry, but figure it out. He stuck numbers on it. And then the idea in this very conversation this morning, I end up talking to this guy after, you know, he kind of needed to vent. And then we started pulling some of this stuff out. It's like, well, what's your spiritual condition like? What are your actions like? What's going on with you? What's your inventory? We talked about that amends last week. Did you get that done? Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did. It was an amazing experience. And we started talking about the actions around Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't leave him hanging out there either. I had a few stories about being very upset with my wife and how I worked through that. And as a matter of fact, I don't know how this works. It's that sort of ninja recovery stuff. But I, right before I took that phone call, I was working on a little resentment with my wife. And I had a little time to meditate on it, right? I don't know about you, but I don't spiral up, right? I don't move from despair to joy. I move from despair to homicide. You know, so I had a little time to think about it. And I was sort of meditating what my life was going to be like after I got rid of this house and drained the bank accounts and got the hell out of town, you know. And then my boy calls. I end up talking him off the ledge. And, you know, when we got off the phone, I realized I'm very fond of my wife. I had a whole different marriage on my hands after I got off the phone with that guy. So the only condition, I can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that I trust in God and clean house. And I've heard the 12 steps talked about. Trust God, clean house, help others, right? Trust God, step three, step 11. Clean house, everything in between those two steps, 4 through 10. If I do these steps, I'm going to learn. I'm going to have an experience with God, not a theory. I'm going to have an experience. And I don't know about you guys, but I trust my experiences. They're mine. They're real estate. If something happens to me, it's true. It's mine. So yeah. Hey, so that's why you can look at me with these magic beans and say, look, bro, all we got is the 12 steps. And if you do the first 11, your marriage might get better. Your boss, you might be grateful for your job. Your situation may change. It won't matter because you'll change.
Elizabeth, alcoholic. And in We Agnostics, it says, we were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. Check on all of them, right? When I first came in and me not spiritually fit, I'm still there sometimes. Many times full of fear, like that's my MO. And so when I first came in, I had a woman sit down. Well, first of all, I have to back up. I was very intoxicated when she met me. She had to break up a fight at my apartment and take me. And she took me to 7 meetings back to back. And I'm falling out of the chair. I have my head down. I'm passing out. I'm talking while other people are talking. And she just kept saying, Elizabeth, try to listen, right? She didn't scold me. She didn't give me hell. She didn't embarrass me. She just said, let's go to another meeting. Let's go to another meeting. And then she started reading this to me. And it was amazing because I connected with her and I realized that she had something that I didn't have, right? First of all, she was able to go to 7 meetings and not take a nap. It didn't work for me with her. I tried and I couldn't stay sober. And so I met another woman and I met another woman. But when I came in this last time, I started working with someone. We went through that. Like, so where are you? Well, I don't really have that many problems. I'm not full of resentment. That's for sure. So I started listing things like, well, my students had to do an intervention on me. I had to take medical leave. I no longer have a job. I got arrested for a DUI with a high BAC and had to go to jail. My parents would come in the middle of the night because I was living with them, of course, and like shake me to make sure I was still alive. You know, this whole list of unmanageability. And then when I started, I was blaming everyone. Well, if you had the childhood I had an amazing childhood. But the story I'll tell you is that, you know, my parents beat me on the regular and starved me to death. Clearly, no. So the amazing thing, though, is I started to slowly trust this first woman 6 years ago. And then I got with another woman and she started to really tell me the truth about myself. And the first time I sat down and was like, well, if I could just get the right job, the right man, the right weight, the right pharmaceutical combination, the right this, then I'll be okay, right? Only then. Not today. I'm not okay today. And she's like, you haven't had a drink or a drug in like 9 months. That's a miracle, right? And that's not you. That's God doing for you what you can't do for yourself. So I can't do it by myself. I definitely need a sponsor in the 12th step. You know, it's a privilege to be able to help other people like I've been helped by so many women. That's it for that.
Thank you both. The next reading is going to be on page 90. I was about to say 83. I don't know. Page 98 again. Now the domestic problem. There may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. When your prospect has made such reparation as he can to his family and has thoroughly explained to them the new principles by which he is living, he should proceed to put those principles into action at home. That is, if he is lucky enough to have a home. Though his family may be at fault in many respects, he should not be concerned about it. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. In many homes, this is a difficult thing to do, but it must be done if any results are to be expected. If persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. The most incompatible people discover they have a basis upon which they can meet. Little by little, the family may see their own defects and admit them. These can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness.
Yeah, if you people would be more helpful and friendly, I'd be okay. You know, that's sort of my default position, right? I love this thing where it's like argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. Those are my hobbies. I love to argue. I love a good challenge. I'm super smart. I'm no longer the smartest guy in the room. I've met a lot of people a lot smarter than I am. I just let them think that, you know. I love to argue. And my default mode sort of is like, what's wrong with this picture? You know, finding the faults, finding the if only, if you just do this, I mean, my God, man, I'm so petty. I've written inventory on the cap being off the toothpaste. I'm married to a woman who is genetically incapable of closing a drawer when she opens it. She just can't. And guess what? She's never going to, right? So the insane part is me pointing it out every time. Every time. You're going to close that drawer? What's up with the drawer? How you doing today, David? Well, after I put the cap on the toothpaste, you know, this is what it's like with me. And it's not the lions that get you, man, in the jungle. It's the mosquitoes, man. You know, this is the annoying little stuff, man. So I love to argue and I love to find fault. And so, yeah, it's just a party being in relation with me. So he says that, and Bill always gives me credit for being a nice guy. He's like, hey, listen, your family may be at fault, bro. You need to not be concerned about that. What should I be concerned about? You can't take something away from me and not give me something, right? I don't know about you guys. I'm terrible at stop doing stuff. You know what I mean? I should stop doing that. I'm terrible at that. I'm great at start doing stuff. I can start doing stuff all day long. So it's like, instead of arguing and finding fault, why don't you concern yourself with your own spiritual demonstration? Demonstration is a doing thing, right? How about I say a little prayer, put the cap on the toothpaste, run a little gratitude list through my head. Think about being cheerful. Think about being pleasant. Start thinking about the things that she's told me that she wants to accomplish today, that she's already been kind enough to share with me. I can start thinking about it and then taking an action, doing a demonstration. So, and I love the bit where it says, if persisted in for a few months, the effect on a man's family is sure to be great. You know, like if I've been grousing around work for 6 months, just bitching about my boss and the job and the supply chain or whatever it is that I'm bitching about, and then I decide, you know what, I'm going to be cheerful today. One day is probably not going to turn my coworkers around. And I love the word persist. If persisted in, persistence is one of those things that I think it falls somewhere on the spiritual action chain, you know, to not only to try, but to continue to try, to try and to fail and to try again, to get up and try again, keep trying, persist day in, day out. So if I persist for a few months, it says, little by little, the family may see their own defects. Then maybe they can be discussed in an atmosphere of helpfulness and friendliness. And like I shared, like tried to get a chuckle on that in the first, but it's absolutely the truth. My first reaction to that is, yes, you need to be more helpful and friendly. It doesn't occur to me that I'm supposed to create the environment of helpfulness. I'm supposed to take the demonstration of a friendly, helpful environment. And if I do that, if I persist at that, it no longer matters what you do. But if I continue to do that, then that's an invitation to you to do the same. I'll share this. I don't know. It just came up in my head. And it may sound like I'm taking credit for it, but what I'm trying to do is give you guys credit for it. I have had the absolute joy and the privilege of raising three beautiful children who've never seen their daddy drunk because of you people. And because of you people, I also raised three boys whose daddy is often quite wrong. You guys taught me to show up and, you know, daddy raised his voice. Daddy shouldn't have done that. I'm going to try to do better next time, buddy. Not my idea of an apology, which is, hey, listen, man, I know I raised my voice, but you were being such an insufferable prick. I had to, you know. That's my idea of an apology. Hey, I did you wrong, but you were wrong first. So I had to, you know. So do you know that all three of those boys, if you call them on something, they'll be like, oh, my bad. My fault. That was me. All three of them can admit they were wrong. I was 30 years old before I admit I was wrong about anything to anybody over anything. But that's what's here, man. Helpfulness and friendliness and the willingness to claim my own defects of care, my own pettiness, my own selfishness, my own hidden agenda. I got to tell somebody about this or it'll eat me alive. And I'll act on it. That's the bad part because that leaks on you guys. You know what? Let me say one more thing. That whole reading kicked off with, it always cracks me up that now the domestic problem, there may be divorce, separation, or just strained relations. Of those three choices, the best possible scenario is just strained relations. That's what it's like living with us. Thanks.
Thanks, David. He should concentrate on his own spiritual demonstration. That is not my default, right? I keep a running list of people who owe me amends, and I'm just waiting for them to come make the amends so that I can then tell them like what it's going to take for them to go to any length, you know, to make it up to me. That's how messed up I am. I'm also like, argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague. My personality, I am a chess player. Now I play in real life, but I suck at it. Like the computer always beats me. But in like relationships with people, I am move after move. I'm five and six moves ahead of you. I'm even setting you up. Sometimes if I like you, I might I might do it gently, but if I don't like you, you're going to think that I had a machete to your throat. It only was like, I used to play these games with sponsors. And when I was coming in and out, you know, one time I like took her to the bathroom and flushed all this alcohol down. There wasn't alcohol in there. I was just trying to show her, you know, oh, I'm really getting this. I could not be honest about anything. I could not look at her and say, I don't know that I want what you have. I just want people off my back. I want people to leave me alone. I want to be able to drink like I want to be able to drink, right? But everybody else around me thought otherwise, you know, the courts, the doctors, my family, my friends, my dog. Like, she used to alerted twice when I was overdosing, you know, like she was amazing. So anyway, fault finding. Yeah. So as I start to sit down with this person and start to go through the steps and get to the third step. The third step was really hard for me, you know, like turning my will over, turning my trust over to this Santa Claus-like God that I had grown up with. And everyone's like, you can have your own conception. I was so ingrained in what, you know, Old Testament smiting me, plagues, locusts. I deserved it all because I was a bad person and there was nothing you were going to say that was going to take away my shame and guilt, right? But slowly, as I started to work the steps, things started to soften for me. I started praying. I started listening. I have a really good friend who does pause and pray. I'm like, my ideas are the most important ideas ever. You should hear what I have to say. But I'm also really introverted, so I really don't care what you think of what I have to say. I just want to put on a good show so I can do what I want to do, which is be left alone with my amazing ideas. The family problems, yeah. We would sit in family counseling sessions and I would just spin them up, right? Oh, this happened to me. I had trauma when I was a little kid. You didn't do anything about it. That's why I drink and drug. Can I have some money now? Right? Because as soon as that session was over, I was back out. But I was going to destroy you in the process. I mean, my relationships with my parents specifically, my mother, I mean, I blamed her, I shamed her, I guilted her, I made her feel like she was the worst mother in the world because I couldn't look at myself. I couldn't look at my actions in the beginning. But going through with a sponsor, I was slowly having an amazing relationship with my mother. Now, it's still, you know, she annoys the shit out of me most days. I hope she's not at home on Zoom. But what a gift, you know, I get to be of service to her today, right? I knew that I was coming to a meeting. I was like, what do you want for dinner early? You don't have to worry about it. Made a great salad, spaghetti, my go-to, because, you know, I don't really know how to cook. Who has time for that? I get to be of service today and I get to let her sleep quietly and peacefully throughout the night, not worried about if I'm breathing or not. And that's because of this program.
Thank you. Oh, so we've got four readings left. I'm going to do a two. And then on page 100, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. And then again on page 100, assuming we are spiritually fit, we can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun our friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures which show drinking scenes. We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go into their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. We meet these conditions every day. An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. There's something the matter with his spiritual status. His only chance for sobriety would be someplace like the Greenland ice cap. And even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch and ruin everything. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problem.
Yeah, dig it. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. I was just thinking when you were reading, I'd like to go through the book and find all the ways that Bill finds to say, practice the 12 steps as a way of life. You know, this idea that the 12 steps are a way of life is just all over the book. And I never really saw it before. Both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Well, what path do I think he's talking about, right? And I'm supposed to do that with the new man, day by day. We do this thing together, right? And he uses that persistence word again. If we persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, it's only when I look back, I can only see any progress or any. I'm trying to use the word gain, and I don't even mean gain. Progress, whatever. I can only see it when I look back. You know, I'm not the man who came into Alcoholics Anonymous. As I sit here tonight, I still struggle with selfishness. I still have fears. I'm still often unreasonable. And, you know, all these things happen to me as a human being. I have those things, but I'm not suffering from a hopeless state of mind and body. And, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. This whole thing, man, this is my opinion. I'm going to tag it that way. So feel free to discard it. This whole thing is set up so that if I do these things, then I get better. Not only do I get better, yay for Team David, I get put into a position where I can help you get better. And that my very life as an ex-problem drinker depends on my willingness to walk shoulder to shoulder with you each day to try to help you. So I don't care if you're 20 days sober or 20 years sober. If you're not feeling it, when's the last time you busted your ass trying to help another human being? You know, I heard somebody say it point blank the other night. They said, you know, man, until you care more about the guy sitting next to you than you care about yourself, you ain't done nothing. That rings with me. I missed it for a long time, man. I treated AA like my own little personal therapy session. You know, I came here and if I left this meeting and felt better, that was a good meeting, bro. Solid meeting. It never says go to a shit ton of meetings, by the way, and anywhere in this book. It says I'm supposed to walk with the new man each day. I got to sit in a graveyard today and listen to a man's fifth step. I got to sit in a graveyard on a beautiful day and listen to a man get free. I got to be the guy who he told things he was going to take to his grave. And I got to be the guy to tell him that I had done those things too. And I'd felt that way and I'd been there and I don't live that way anymore. And I don't feel that way anymore. And yeah, you did those things and the consequences of those actions, you're going to be responsible for, but that's not who you are. That's freedom, man. That's what we trade in around here is freedom, not relief. But when I look back, I can see that since I've taken this journey, since I've tried persistently but flawed to continue to offer my life to the, whatever God is and to try to help you, I look back on an amazing life. The thing, what I do for a living is an accident. You know, where I live is an accident. I came to Norfolk, Virginia on a geographic, you know, and I stayed for 40 years, you know, but the life that I live today is absolutely full of decency and kindness and consideration and people who genuinely love one another and think about each other and try to make each other's life better. It's all over the place. So should I just sit home and enjoy that? No, I'm supposed to be here with you, no matter what my present circumstance. So I dig this line, you know, hey, man, you know, if you go to a barbershop, you're going to get a haircut. If you can't walk into the barbershop and not get a haircut, you still have an alcoholic mind. And the only remedy that he offers for me for my alcoholic mind is some change in my spiritual status. That's it. There's no changing your people, places and things, putting the plug in the jug, you know, but remembering your last drunk. That's the one I love. I just covered that chapter with a guy today where it says, hey, your most powerful desire to stop is not going to help you. My book tells me remembering my last drunk is not a tool. I'm going to throw the whiskey in the milk if that's what I feel like doing. So the only remedy for this alcoholic mind, this thing that's going to talk me into a drink, this thing that's going to talk to me into draining the bank accounts, getting on my motorcycle and leaving the marriage. That's all happening in between here. The only remedy for that is a change to my spiritual status. And the only map that he offers me is 12 steps that I can't do by myself. I have to do them with you. And guess what? I love doing them with you. Thanks.
when we look back, we realize the things that which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Right. So I alluded to, like, well, I didn't allude to, I said it, that I had a really difficult relationship with God. But, you know, 6 years ago, 6.5 years ago, I was a high school teacher here in Norfolk. It was a Friday morning. I always prided myself that I never drank at school. I never drank before school, unless you count like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. before school, when I had to be there at 6 a.m. But I did a lot of pharmaceuticals at school. And that last day that I taught, my students came in at 7 o'clock in the morning. They told me that they were worried about me. And I was like, yeah, I have bronchitis. And they're like, no, we want to pray for you. Now, I did not teach at a parochial school. I taught at a public school in Norfolk, one of the rougher ones. They got up, they circled around me, they put their hands on me, and they prayed over me. And the first time in a long time, I heard a voice that was not my own voice. And I don't think I was being delusional at the time, although I questioned it later, that said, if these children care more about you than you care about you, you are hurting them and you need to leave now. And I walked out of school. I went to my doctor and I had a letter written that said I was a danger to myself and to my students, right? My whole career right there. But I could not put another child in harm's way because I started coming to these meetings and learning things. I hadn't stopped drinking. I was separated from alcohol. In the last 6 years have been a lot of work, right? I've been a very sick person. And in this last year, specifically the last 2 months, I realized that I was pretty stagnant, pretty complacent. I didn't want to work with other people. I didn't want to come to meetings. I didn't want to talk about it to anybody. And so I did pray. I got on my knees and I prayed and I asked for direction. And again, that voice said, you know, you need another new experience. So I humbled myself and asked someone who had less time than I did to take me through the steps rapidly. And it's been hell because my ego balks every day. When I call this person and I want to start launching into, oh, my day, this, my, nope, we're in the book, right? I don't need to hear about your craziness. I know you know how to do that. and I'm like, but I'm terminally unique, right? Is my big thing. I have more things going on than you can imagine. But I say all of that to say is because you can still be in the rooms and have some time and still be miserable, right? Because I'm not a perfect person. I've been removed from alcohol. And the solution for me, right, in this book is to work with others, to be of service. And I didn't want to do that. Thankfully, it's starting to wake up again and that excitement is there and the passion is there. And the realize, you know, I've loved this part about the Greenland ice cap. I mean, I was literally jailed, right? And then jailed at my parents' house. No access to money, cars. I mean, I was being watched like a dog. No alcohol in the house. There was vanilla extract. There was perfume. There was hand sanitizer. That's how insane I was. So today, 6 years later, I can sit anywhere. I can go anywhere. I've kissed a guy who I didn't realize had been drinking. Like, oh my God. Like, and I definitely recoiled like a hot flame. And that's only from the power of this program and the people in these rooms. Thanks for letting me know.
So I'm going to read these last two and you'll have about 3-ish minutes each. All right. Page 102. Why sit with a long face in places where there is drinking, citing about the good old days. If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastic. If you are with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means, go along. Let your friends know they are not to change their habits on your account. At a proper time and place, explain to all your friends why alcohol disagrees with you. If you do this thoroughly, few people will ask you to drink. While you were drinking, you were withdrawing from life little by little. Now you are getting back into the social life of this world. Do not start to withdraw again just because your friends drink liquor. Your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere you can be helpful. If you should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth, on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives and God will keep. And then page 103, after all, our problems were of our own making. Bottles were only a symbol. Besides, we have stopped fighting anybody or anything. We have to.
We have to. Yeah, I'm trying to decide. There's two different stories, but the whole thing about your job now is to be a place where you can be of maximum helpfulness to others. I hope. I know what it's like when that's in the front part of my mind. And I know what it's like when what's in the front part of my mind is what I'm getting out of the show. And I know which situation I'd like better. So, I'll just tell this story really quickly. It goes back, try to increase the pleasure of those there. I was going home for my first Thanksgiving. Some of my greatest drinking buddies are members of my own family. And I was heading home for the first sober Thanksgiving. And I'm flipped out about it. You know, I don't know how to act. I'm going to go there. They're going to be drinking. My brother's going to want to get hammered. You know, I don't know how to explain to him. I'm not drinking. These are all very practical concerns, you know. And I called my sponsor and I'm talking to him and he says, you got about a 45 minute drive in front of you, right? And I said, yep. And he said, well, why don't you use that time to pray a little bit and think about what you can do for them when you get there, not what they're going to do for you or how badly it's going to suck. And I hung up the phone and I thought, this guy's a genius. I didn't know it was in the book, you know, but I was just dumb enough to follow that suggestion. I mean, I went home, my mother was, you know, half in a drink and chopping onions or something, you know, and I was like, hey, Ma, anything I can do to help? Oh, honey, would you peel the potatoes? Yeah, Ma. And I start peeling the potatoes and we're talking and I noticed that I'm comfortable. My brother comes in the room. He's got a beer in his hand. He offers me one. I'm like, no, I'm good. Hey, you got a job. You got a new job. I heard you got a new job. Do you know that he wanted to talk about his new job? He wanted to just tell me all about it. He didn't give a rat's ass that I didn't drink. And so I tried something and it worked. And what I tried was thinking about you and asking questions about you and being interested in you and trying to increase your pleasure instead of worrying about me, maybe for the first time in my whole life. And I had a lovely time. First time in my life. Thanks.
I heard at a meeting recently, you know, I mean, you hear a lot of things at meetings, but
yeah, you do.
This person was talking specifically about, you know, being able to be spiritually fit and go anywhere, you know, where alcohol served. And I thought back to, you know, 6 years ago when I first came in this time, I wouldn't go down the beer aisle. I wouldn't face the bar at a restaurant. I wouldn't be around people who were drinking. I didn't go to my niece's birthday party because she's born on 4th of July. Kegs are there at a 3-year-old birthday party, which is funny. Anyway, you know, fast forwarding to today, I can go anywhere. I can do anything as long as I have the right motives, right? Just because I've been separated from drugs and alcohol, I still have lots of alcoholic thinking. Talk about men, food, shopping, you know, Bridgerton, you know, whatever it is, I'm all in, I want more. But the beautiful thing, and I'll just wrap up with this is, you know, I talked about the students who did an intervention. I had one reach out to me recently. And she was asking how I was doing. We had kept in touch, you know, over Facebook. And she asked me how I stopped drinking. Mm. And I was able to definitely tell her about the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and that I was there. She's not ready to come into the rooms, but she knows where to go, right? And she knows that I'll be there, happy to see her. And that's the gift, like full circle, right, for me. That I can come and I can be of service to someone else that gave me such a gift that they have no idea what they gave me. Those kids, you know, what a miracle. And what a miracle it is that she can come back and say, I need help now too. And I know what to do because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Thank you, man. Let's thank our wonderful man of the night. Happy
all right. We are going to pass this and seventh tradition states that every level of every group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contribution. The seventh tradition is the level of AA. It is both a privilege and a respect that not only their group, but also their central office, local area, and the general service self-support. This keeps AA free of outside help, the alcohol, our common welfare, group endeavors to in which our meeting. announcements. Are there any AA related announcements?
Hey, James.
Dinner's gonna start at 6 o'clock. Speaker at 7. Got Buster H coming all the way out in downtown Suffolk to speak. It's potluck. Bring a dish of your choice or anybody else's choice. We'll all share. Everybody bring something if you come. And bring somebody, bring guests. Just don't have to come. Bring a guest. We'd love to have them. Thank you.
Thanks.
That sounds like fun, Jim.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome.
We have flyers.
I'm going to be there.
Me too. There's a couple flyers over there that y'all should take. Anybody that's here, take the last of them. Distribute them in this last week. We would be grateful. Any other announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or are in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. All right. Sponsorship questions. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be available right here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. If you're shy, you can always send an email to info@simpleactions.net. Reminders, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Cafe Stella on Colonial Avenue, right across from Bank of America. In closing, let's thank our wonderful panel. And please, after we close out, come up and thank Voluntold.
I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic.
G-Money.
For you, big book with page one. Our book is realize we know, but obviously great events, you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you, keep you until then.
Thanks, Rick. All right, we can circle up and we'll close it out with the Lord's Prayer.
Thank you.
Quick moment of silence.
Hey.
Oh, yeah.